Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, bitches? How's everybody doing today? It is a rainy day here in New York, but that doesn't mean anything because I have so many stories that the weather is irrelevant. Man, Trump gave me a little bit of a scare this morning. Not lying, he gave me a little bit of a scare. That authoritarian impulse is alive and well. So I have that story for you. I'm not going to lead with that because we actually got more important stuff, who he might pick for Secretary of State. I know this is like the 913th time that they were like, no, seriously, this is who we're picking for Secretary of State. But it's important. It's important because if they go in this direction, yet again, this is example number 413. Don't believe the hype about, oh, yes, he wants to drain the swamp. No, he wants to drain his balls all over America's face. That's what he wants to do. I'm starting with the gross references early today. That's how we roll today. So I'm going to lead with that story and then forget about it. I got Kellyanne Conway making an ass of herself on Twitter. Of course, Trump's right-hand woman, she is. And later on in the show, Bernie Sanders has a new piece of legislation to hold Donald Trump accountable. We have Business Insider has a terrifying report for us on the state of the economy. And a whole bunch more, man. Plus, the United States is setting up a permanent base to continue to be imperialist. That's fun. So let's get started, and we're going to do that with Donald Trump's newest Secretary of State tease. Donald Trump's transition team told Bloomberg that he's now considering David Petraeus for Secretary of State. That would be a disaster beyond description. So first and foremost, again, with the whole drain the swamp thing, if he goes with David Petraeus, not just for Secretary of State, but for any position, drain the swamp, my ass cheeks. That's not happening. In fact, if the only thing he's draining is his balls on America's face, if he goes with David Petraeus, because Petraeus is the epitome of the establishment. He's the epitome of a corrupt insider. And so for those of you who don't know, let me give you some background on David Petraeus, because this is really important. He orchestrated the surge in Iraq. So, Donald, you went around telling everybody you don't agree with the Iraq war, you don't believe in the Iraq war. That was one of the fundamental points you made during the primary and during the general election. Now, people rightly brought up, well, that's not exactly accurate because you flip-flopped a bunch of times, and there's video of you flip-flopping. I mean, you initially said to Howard Stern you were kind of tepidly in favor of the war, and then as time went by, you went from, no, we should pull out all the troops, we should pull, like, literally all of them out right now, and then that became, no, we should have pulled out, but we should have left behind, like, 20,000 troops, and that became, no, you got to finish the job, and it just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Same thing with that, same thing with Libya. But the point you kept coming back to recently was, no, I'm against it, I'm against it, I'm against it. Well, General Petraeus, I mean, you know, there's a reason they referred to him as General Betrayus. Remember that whole scandal? So, and his whole thing was he outlined a way to stay involved in these wars, but there was no plan there. There was no there. The idea was like, just let us stay, and now we have no end goal. And we're just going to kind of be there indefinitely, and if you don't like that, well, sucks for you. So, but this is the guy now that he's saying, maybe Secretary of State for him. Now, that's not – it gets even worse than this because, remember, Trump kept ripping Hillary Clinton for, oh, my God, look at what you did with your emails. What you did is, you know, so wrong, and how dare you treat classified information like that and top-secret information like that. I mean – it might get in the wrong hands, and you're playing loose with it, so maybe you should be in jail. Well, David Petraeus of course, there was a huge scandal over the fact that he gave his mistress classified information. So think about like the different levels of this. You have people like Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning who leaked information because it was in the public interest, it was in the public good, and they did it on purpose, and their intent was as pure as it gets, and the argument was, hey, the American people need to know this because it's illegal for the government to not tell them. So those people are heroes. Then you have somebody like Hillary Clinton who did what she did, but the argument was, and it's accurate, hey, it's not like she was a fucking Russian spy or something, and the intent was to give information to bad actors or people who you don't know who the fuck they are. It was just basically laziness and entitlement, which is why she was reckless with those emails. But that's a problem, and there should have been consequences for that. There were no consequences for that. But Trace is even worse. On purpose, I'm going to give classified information to my mistress. And think about the levels of punishment. Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, who did the right thing and did the best thing and had pure intent, you know, they're exiled or in jail. Hillary Clinton, who it was just being reckless with the information, she's free to go. David Petraeus, who on purpose, gave the information to his mistress, so little slap on the wrist, go away for 13 minutes, come back, and then maybe you'll be Secretary of State, and maybe the guy who said he's going to drain the swamp will fucking pick you, even though you're the face of the war on terror, which has been an epic disaster, and even though you were given information to your mistress. And then I think the most important point about this guy is it's all the idea of like, oh, David Petraeus, he's a general, and generals deserve our respect, and we need to remember that. Come on now, nobody can be against General Petraeus. Petraeus is the guy who said, hey, I have an idea. How about we arm Al-Qaeda in Syria because Al-Qaeda will fight ISIS and Al-Qaeda will fight Assad? This jackass said, let's arm Al-Qaeda. The people who did 9/11. And now the fact that he's considered for anything is a fucking outrage and a scandal. I mean, this guy should be in fucking jail, not just for his crimes with, classified information, but more because he's a war criminal and he has horrendous ideas like this. And it's not just the idea of this, but this, I mean, when you look at his record and the different battles he was involved in, you know that they were battles where massive numbers of civilian casualties were taken, and you know that they didn't give a fuck about it. So this is a guy directly involved with, directly responsible for, orchestrating aspects of the war on terror, played loose with classified information, still floats the dumbest ideas ever, like let's arm Al-Qaeda in Syria, and now Trump's like, yeah, maybe we'll put him as Secretary of State. Donald Trump is one of those guys, you can't take anything he says seriously. He doesn't know what he believes. He doesn't know what he's going to do. And we might end up getting, I said this early on, if you guys remember, I said it could go one of two ways with Trump. Either he's going to be the deepest establishment insider ever, because he's going to get into the office and go, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm in way over my head. So he just defers to the people around him. And who would you pick in a scenario where you're uncomfortable? You pick the establishment to surround you, the people who have been there. So he might be the most establishment president ever, or he might be, the authoritarian impulse and urge that he has, which is clear and obvious based on his track record, that might take over, and he might be the most bullheaded authoritarian president ever. I think it's going to be one of the two, but it looks most likely that it's going to be a mix. That it's either going to be the authoritarian impulse takes over at times and he goes balls to the wall and not giving a fuck about separation of powers. And then at other times it'll be, hey, well, I'm going to defer to the establishment and let them choose. And if you do that, that's the only reason why I'd consider somebody like General Petraeus. Because you go, I don't know, I heard the name before. I know he was a big guy in Washington. I know he's got a track record of doing stuff. I don't care about the actual details of what it is that he did. I just heard his name, and he's been in positions of power, so just bring him in, let him take care of whatever that shit is, because God knows I'm not ready for it. So either way, it's fucking unacceptable, man. David Petraeus for Secretary of State. And this is the 37th person they've said, well, maybe he's going to be Trump's Secretary of State, but the reason I'm covering it for you is because they're meeting. So, you know, it's like I do a little bit of pre-vetting to determine, well, are they serious about this one being Secretary of State or getting a position in the administration? Yes, no. And whenever they go as far as, like, let's have a meeting and let's float the name in the media, then I go, whoa, okay, now something's going on here. So we'll see who he goes with, but if he goes with David Petraeus, oh, I don't know who would be worse for that position, Rudy Giuliani or David Petraeus? Because that was another one that was floated, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani is a fucking maniac. I mean, a loose cannon, crazy person, total ridiculous view on the world. What little we know of him on foreign policy has been grotesque. So I don't know. I mean, it's a sad world when you're sitting there rooting for Mitt Romney to be Secretary of State, because that's the only name of the ones they floated that you feel like wouldn't just obviously 100% fuck everything up. He might only 78% fuck everything up. So when you're rooting for Mitt Romney, you know you're in a terrible place. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue, and we go to Kellyanne Conway. So Trump's right-hand woman, Kellyanne Conway, tweeted about his official victory yesterday, since Michigan finally finished counting their ballots, and they made it official. So Trump ended up getting 306 electoral votes. That's, you know, what, 2 days after the election, you already knew that he was up in Michigan, and it looked like he was going to hold that. So I assumed it was going to be 306 anyway, but it was made official yesterday. So she said 306, landslide, blowout, historic on Twitter. Now, here's the thing about the internet. They don't fuck around. The internet misses nothing. You can't get away with anything on the internet if you're not, you know, 100% correct with it. So people, you know, responded to that, and they went after it. They're like, actually, that's factually wrong. And Nate Silver weighed in, and he said, actually, way below average for a winner's total. And then he laid it out here. In 1984, 525 electoral votes won. Jesus, 525. Good googly moogly. 489 in 1980. In 1988, 426. In 1996, 379. In 1992, 370. In 2008, 365. 2012, 332. 2016, that's, of course, this year, 306. And then the only ones that were less in modern history, 2004, so the John Kerry election, 286. And in 2000, the Gore election with 271. So there's a – okay, not only is it not a landslide, it is below average for winners. So as far as winners go, you're on the lower end of how much winners get. Now, look, he still won, so, you know, she should be doing the little end zone dance. I'm totally cool with that. But it's just not true to say, a landslide, blowout, historic. But here's the most important point. Here's why she's saying it. Because she wants to argue, and Trump wants to argue, and Pence and the rest of the team, they want to go out there to the media and say, we have a mandate. So I'm going to need you to step aside and let us do whatever we want and not make a peep. Thank you very much. That's what they're setting up here. That's what they're laying the groundwork for. And interesting, so you're going to bring up the 306 electoral votes, but you're not bringing up the fact that Hillary Clinton is leading by over 2 million popular votes. 2 million. Now, everybody knows I'm no fan of Hillary Clinton. I'm no fan of Donald Trump either. But 2 million fucking votes more than the other guy. If anything, the mandate goes in the other direction. It's the biggest mandate for a loser that there's ever been. So don't buy the nonsense, because they're going to say it. They're going to come out and say it. They're going to say, look, the American people spoke, 306 electoral votes. It's a mandate. It's a mandate. We get to do what we want, and if the Democrats block it or if other Republicans block it, not okay, we're going to come after them. Oh, boy. I've always said on these issues, the best thing to do, go to the specific policy goals, the specific policies they're pushing for, and go, you know, case by case. So if Trump goes up there and says, here's what we're going to do, we're going to lower wages, as, by the way, they already indicated they will do, because Obama, with the overtime rules, remember, he made it so that people making under $47,000 get overtime by law. It used to be $23,000. That was an executive order of his, a great one. They say, well, look, if the court doesn't slap it down, we're going to slap it down. So if he wants to lower wages, well, then, no, you don't have a fucking mandate for that because it goes specifically to the numbers. So, for example, when it comes to the minimum wage, 80% of the American people say raise it. So if you come along and say, I want to lower wages, well, no, you're wrong. They may have elected you, but they elected you despite that because the numbers show they're in favor of that. And again, the list goes on and on. You have 58% of the American people want to legalize marijuana. If Donald Trump and his fucking idiot boy Jeff Sessions, who he wants for attorney general, if they crack down, which they almost certainly will, on weed, well, you don't have a fucking mandate for that. In fact, it's the opposite. You were elected despite your shitty fucking position and your appointments on the issue of marijuana because the overwhelming majority of the American people say we're for it. So here's what's going to happen. Where we agree with you, if you're a liberal, where we agree with you, okay, then we're going to work with you. Just like Bernie Sanders said, you want to do an infrastructure bill, let's do an infrastructure bill. You want to block TPP, let's block TPP. You want to protect Social Security and Medicare, I have my doubts that you'll do it because of some of your appointments who are privatizers of those programs. But you said you want to save it. Okay, you want to save it, you want to not cut it, you want to maybe expand it, we'll work with you and I'll do it with a fucking smile on my face. That's real bipartisanship. That's intelligent bipartisanship. But if you want to, you know, go do unpopular things and claim to have a mandate, my foot is going to meet the inside of your ass. I say things very artfully, I know. So just understand what they're setting up here, because that's the goal with Kellyanne Conway. 306, landslide, blowout, historic. Okay, now everybody step aside and let us do whatever we want, even if it's horrific. No, don't step aside. The other person got over 2 million more popular votes. So that alone destroys your fucking mandate. But furthermore, again, you got to go issue by issue. And if you claim to have a mandate on an issue where the American people say, fuck off, well, we're going to tell you to fuck off too. Okay. And it is time to continue here. All right, let's go to Donald Trump and what he said, which is concerning this morning. So Donald Trump has really been saying some concerning things recently. This morning he took to Twitter and he said the following, quote, nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag. If they do, there must be consequences, perhaps loss of citizenship or a year in jail. Yeah. No. Hey, Slapstick, you might want to look up that whole First Amendment thing. You know, the Constitution, the thing that you pretend to care so deeply about. I love how, you know, with the people on the right, they only know one amendment, the Second Amendment. Guns. I believe in guns. I think the Second Amendment literal text is, I believe in guns. Guns and Jesus are awesome. Ronald Reagan is great. That's what the Second Amendment says? I'm just reading it to you. That's all I'm doing. I'm reading it to you. Actually, I'm wrong. They know two amendments. The Second Amendment and the Tenth Amendment, states' rights. States' rights, which they always bring up when, you know, it's a pesky conversation about, like, rights for black people arises. Come on now. States' rights. Y'all in liberal New York and California, y'all might want to give your Negroes some rights. But look, here down south, we do it differently at the state level, so states' rights. You got to let our states have freedom. Got to let our states have freedom to crack down on black people and take away their freedom. I always love that argument, because that's the argument they made, by the way, in the 1960s. When we were talking about civil rights and voting rights, the southern states said, no, piss off, because our state has a right to make these laws. You're going to talk about rights as you take away the rights of black people? That's fucking insane. Like, they view it as a right to keep black second-class citizens. So anyway, I'm getting randomly off in the weeds here, but this is a guy who, Donald Trump, he was viewed as, by many people, it's great that he won because it's a crackdown on social justice warriors and the PC police. And I warned you from day one. No. He's a right-wing social justice warrior. He is the right-wing PC police. So just because the authoritarian crackdown comes from a different place on the political spectrum doesn't make it okay and doesn't make it good. So all the free speech warriors out there, I need you to come out right now and do hour-long segments about it. Donald Trump is a fucking threat to the First Amendment. He's letting everybody know. He's saying that's what he wants to do. He's saying it on Twitter. Now, by the way, just so everybody knows the facts here, and this is a fact that might blow your mind, you know who also supported this? Hillary Clinton. Of course she did. You have to run like the worst fucking candidate ever against Donald Trump. But in 2005, she even made legislation over it. It's like the Flag Desecration Act or some shit, where the punishment was a $100,000 fine or up to a year in jail. That's what he's calling. He's calling for the same thing. So he might be trolling and be like, yeah, watch out, all the liberals flip out, and they didn't say dick about it during when Hillary Clinton proposed it. But look, I'm consistent. I'm against it when both of them do it. I'm against it when both of them do it because I'm not an idiot, and I actually care about the issues, and it doesn't matter to me what fucking political party is proposing the bad idea. If it's a bad idea, I'm going to say it's a bad idea, and I'm going to say we should all be against it. So, but Don, you don't believe in free speech. You don't believe in the First Amendment, but this shows you that deep authoritarian impulse, and now this guy is president-elect. Now, you might say, well, Kyle, come on now. He's the president, so he's going to be restrained by the Constitution. Maybe, maybe not. Why do I say that? Well, look at shit that's happened under Obama. I mean, he's doing drone wars and interventions in 7 different countries. Did he get a declaration of war for each of those countries? No, he didn't. Now, you're supposed to under the Constitution, but what did they do? They went, I don't know, let's just tack this on to a former declaration of war from the George W. Bush era. So you say, I don't know, lump that in with the bin. Yeah, but that's not the way it works, but they just do it because fuck it. You know, I'm the president. Where there's a question, I'm just going to defer to, I'm going to do it and tell you to fuck off. Now, he does it on some issues. On other issues, he doesn't, and I wish he would, like Guantanamo Bay, because Guantanamo Bay itself is unconstitutional. That's another thing. So Guantanamo Bay is still open. This idea of, like, the president is restrained by the Constitution, obviously the Constitution makes clear there has to be due process. Okay, what about when there's not due process? What about when they drone bomb American citizens? Remember Anwar al-Awlaki? Now, you could say he's a horrible guy, and in fact, I'd agree with you. He almost certainly was a terrorist. But you need to have fucking due process set up. If we can have the government just unilaterally declare anybody who we think maybe or maybe not is a terrorist, we get to just drone bomb, well, then there is no Constitution. There is no due process. There is no habeas corpus. There's no fucking Magna Carta, which dates back to 1215. So you had all these constitutional overreaches, NSA, massively unconstitutional, violates the Fourth Amendment protection from unreasonable search and seizure. Obama beefed that up, put it on steroids and human growth hormone. So massively unconstitutional precedent laid out there, and now President Numbnuts takes over. President Authoritarian Clown Boy takes over and can do untold amounts of damage. And again, if you think he's concerned about separation of powers, I don't think you know a goddamn thing about Donald Trump. And this is something, I always said, he's an existential threat to the First Amendment. And because he's given us so much evidence of that. He sued Bill Maher over a joke. He sued The Onion over a joke. Right off the bat, by the way. To me, that's strike one, you're out. I mean, I guess it's strike one and two, you're out. But I don't even need three. If you're suing somebody over a joke, you're just as bad, if not worse, than any fucking social justice warrior, PC police, college campus kid, because you know damn well if that happened, everybody would flip out. Oh, get over it, you fucking thin-skinned little liberal prick. But when Trump does it, oh, daddy's so strong. He's not strong. He's fucking American Erdogan, American Gaddafi. That's what he is. He created a media blacklist. Who does that? I'm going to have a list, and you're not allowed to cover me on the campaign trail because you said things I don't like about you. Well, what, you think this guy's not going to crack down on political enemies when he's president? Now, he's in theory restrained by the First Amendment when he's in the office of president. You think that's going to stop him? You think that's going to bother him? He's going to stay up at night like, let me go through U.S. case law to find out what the precedent is on free speech. And by the way, when you talk about that, flag burning was like a gigantic issue not that long ago where there was a court case over this. And even fucking Antonin Scalia, who's one of the worst Supreme Court justices in U.S. history, even he said, okay, look, that is free speech 101. To stop somebody from burning a flag because you don't like the fact that they burn a flag, get over it, file that under freedom, bitch. In fact, real patriotism is not refraining from burning a flag. Real patriotism is understanding that you live in a country that allows you to burn the flag without throwing you in jail. Because less free countries, go ahead and try that and watch what happens. You burn a flag, oh, that's sacred. Now we're going to throw you in jail. Just like, oh, you burn a holy book, oh, no, we're going to put you in jail. In the United States of America, we believe in freedom. We have freedom. You're supposed, oh, you burned a holy book? Okay. What's for dinner? Oh, you burned a flag? Whatevs, dude, is what it is. But here you go. Here he is saying it on Twitter. He's got to be reeled in, but I don't know if anybody could reel him in. He's got to pump his brakes. I don't know if it's in him to pump his brakes. But if he's saying shit like this, it's an indication of what he's going to do, guys. It's a fucking indication of what he's going to do. And this should scare the shit out of you, especially coupled with his we need to open up the libel laws argument. Remember that? He said he wants our speech laws to be more like England, which are a fucking dumpster fire, where you open up the door to, you said something that offended me, I'm suing you. What the fuck is this going on here? So this is authoritarianism 101. Everybody who voted for Trump because, he is against the PC police and the social justice warrior, look in the goddamn mirror because you are what you despise. You're just a right-wing version of it. Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, I have a crazy story. It's actually a similar topic. It's, I think, why Donald Trump was pissed about the American flag thing. He saw a story on it. We're going to talk about that story, and then we're going to get to Bernie Sanders' new piece of legislation to hold Donald Trump accountable. So we got all that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
so won't bump drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the lecturer, nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by
myself. All right,
myself.
We're back, y'all.
Welcome back to the show. All right, let's get into it. I think this is why Donald Trump was mad about flag burning. I love the next story here because of the irony and hypocrisy in it. It's just absolutely earth-shattering. So Raw Story explains, a group of Donald Trump supporters and conservative veterans converged on the campus of a Massachusetts college on Sunday to call for the arrest of students who burned a flag and to protest the school's decision not to fly the U.S. flag in the wake of Trump's election. Lock them up, chanted the protesters, who claimed they were there in support of the First Amendment. After Trump's election, university officials chose to fly the U.S. flag at half-mast as a sign of national mourning. When some in the community were outraged, Hampshire took the flag down altogether. At a protest on Veterans Day, some students burned a U.S. flag. At the protest on Sunday, some students tried to block access to the campus. Run them over, shouted one protester. Okay, we just covered the story about how Donald Trump went on Twitter seemingly randomly, and he said, if somebody burns the flag, it should be a year in jail. Oh, I'm an authoritarian, and I hate free speech. He didn't end that last part, but it's true. So I just covered that story, and now you see why he brought that up. He probably caught wind of this story, read this story, and it got him mad, and he tweeted. By the way, it was super early in the morning, but for him it might have been he was up all night, and then it was whatever it was, like 7 in the morning or some shit. He's like, ah, anger, and then he fucking, you know, went to sleep in a pile of his own piss. But so this is probably where the spark for that tweet came from, this story. But look at the irony in the story. So first of all, is it something that's debatable about, hey, man, you know, so, okay, the person you didn't want to win won. Does that mean you do, what did they do, fly the flag at half-mast or something like that? Does that mean you should do that? Well, no. I mean, you're a college campus. I mean, I guess there's an argument for maybe college campuses stay neutral. But then again, I get it. I mean, it's not like fucking BYU or Liberty University is neutral. They're outwardly in favor of conservative politicians. So if there are colleges that are in favor of liberal politicians, I mean, look, I file that under whatever, but I get that there's a conversation to be had there. Hey, don't fucking do something that says, fuck this president and we like the other president. But that's neither here nor there, because they did it. And as a response to that, well, the conservative students were angry. And then you had some of the liberal students say, well, look, we're going to keep protesting. And one of the things they did is they burned a U.S. flag. So now here's the part of the story that just is everything to me, because it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the stupidity involved with the conservatives when, so the liberals burn the flag, and then these conservatives show up to try to stop them, and they show up to chant, lock them up, lock them up. And then when people talk to them and say, hey, what's up, man? What are you guys doing? They go, oh, we're here in support of the First Amendment. Okay, stop. Let's think about it again here. They say some of the liberal students, so they burned a flag. They blocked entrance into the campus, I believe. And the conservatives responded by chanting, lock them up. And they were mad that the administration took down the flag altogether. Not the administration. Well, I guess it is the administration, but the people in charge of the school took down the flag altogether. And so they shouted, run them over, lock them up, and they were counter-protesting the liberals. And when asked why, they go, oh, free speech. Okay, but no, wait, they're the ones who burned the American flag, and you're the one who's saying you believe in free speech. Well, you should be protesting on their side. They're like, no, we're against that, so we're here in favor of free speech. Well, this is fucking Orwell 101, man. No, like, that's exact. Orwell is, okay, so everything means its opposite. So peace is perpetual war. This is one that we've seen recently. While you're intervening in 7 different countries, you go, no, it's cool because we believe in peace. We believe in perpetual peace. Okay, but then how are you involved in 7 different fucking interventions? Well, that is peace. No, it's not. It's the opposite of peace. hey, we believe in human rights, even though we have places around the world where we torture. Okay, no, so then you don't believe in human rights. No, but it's cool because we're doing it to uphold human rights. No, but that's the opposite of human rights. Well, same thing with this. No, we're here because we believe in free speech. But you're protesting the people who are burning an American flag. They're the ones practicing free speech. Yeah, but we're here to protest them in favor of free speech. But that's not in favor of free speech. That's the opposite of it. People drive me fucking crazy, man. I don't get the disconnect between what you claim to stand for and your actions. You see what I'm saying? It's always bothered me, but I feel like it's more apparent this election and in recent days than ever before. Because how do you not see that? Those examples I gave are probably the best examples. The let's do endless wars. We claim to be fighting for peace. Let's say we care about human rights as we torture and do all that other stuff. And then this is we believe in free speech. And to show how much we believe in free speech, we will crack down on free speech. We believe in the Constitution so much that we violate it every opportunity we get. We got to get past this, man. We got to get past this. We got to be more rational. But I fear that we're too factional. Is that the word? I was going to say fractional, but I think it's factional. We're too factional. We're too tribalistic. And it just feels like everybody's playing for a team. And none of them seem to care about principles. They don't seem to care about, you know, being consistent. I've seen so many articles now that since Donald Trump has tepidly come out, or not even tepidly, during the campaign he just strongly came out for an infrastructure bill and against TPP. Now many liberals who their whole thing was I want an infrastructure bill and I'm against TPP, many of them are like, okay, no, I don't want it because he wants it. We did a story about Paul Krugman the other day, a guy who was a liberal and, you know, who probably at a different time would argue that outsourcing deals are horrific for the country, NAFTA, you know, CAFTA, Permanent Normal Trade Relations with China. But now he argued yesterday, oh, look, I mean, get over it. It's inevitable. There's no bringing those jobs back, so just get over it. It's inevitable. Now, why are you doing that? He's doing that because Donald Trump is against TPP, so now he's like, well, I got to just be against him, so whatever he's for, even if I used to be for it, now I'm against it. I just can't take the hypocrisy on both sides. And this is the conservative hypocrisy. The whole thing about we believe in free speech, we're against the social justice warriors and the PC police. Anyway, now we're going to go to a protest where we fucking berate people for burning a flag, and we say we're in favor of free speech, as we're against people who are doing what is known as, like, the signature free speech expression. Like, that's number one on the list of this is free speech even though it pisses you off, is burning the flag. There was a big case about that not that long ago. And even Scalia, the ultra-conservative, was like, yeah, no, that's totally free speech, and if you don't think it is, I don't think you're thinking clearly, and it's kind of crazy that you don't think that's free speech. That is, like, the definition of free speech. Doing something that offends a shitload of people, but you're allowed to do it because we're a free country. So there you have it. Right-wingers protesting against free speech, as they claim. No, we're protesting for free speech. Well, then why are you protesting against free speech? Well, because we're for free speech. I don't get it, and neither should you. Okay. Now we're going to go to Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is promising a new piece of legislation to try and hold Donald Trump accountable. This is an absolutely great idea. So Huffington Post explains here. In an outline of the Outsourcing Prevention Act, Sanders said the law would bar companies that ship jobs overseas from enjoying federal contracts, tax breaks, grants, or loans, require clawbacks of federal perks, levy a tax that would be equal to the amount of savings achieved by outsourcing jobs or 35% of its profits, whichever is higher, and prevent executives of companies that offshore jobs from drawing bonuses, stock options, or golden parachutes. Okay, so immediately what this reminds me of is the story we covered yesterday where Paul Krugman said, there's no policy that can bring back the lost jobs. There's no policy. There's no policy that'll bring back manufacturing jobs, factory jobs, and all these things that help the middle class in the United States of America. The race to the bottom is inevitable. We got to outsource the jobs. It is what it is. Get over it if you're mad about NAFTA or CAFTA or permanent normal trade relations with China. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. Okay, no, I told you that's factually incorrect, and that's actually a crazy thing to say, and the only reason Paul Krugman is saying that is because now Donald Trump is against TPP. It's certainly in rhetoric. So Krugman's like, I got to be against Trump. So even if Trump's in favor of good things, now I'm in favor of bad things. So that's as far as his Democratic hack partisan mind goes. But here's Bernie Sanders like, oh, really? You don't think there's anything we could do policy-wise to fix this problem? Let me propose a bill with, like, 312 different options of policies that would fix this problem. I just read them off to you here. So, okay, let's make it so that if you outsource jobs, well, then you get zero federal contracts. By law, you're not even considered. That'll make a bunch of these companies stop because a bunch of big companies are the ones who outsource jobs. And also a bunch of big companies usually get federal contracts. So right off the bat, boom, you saved a whole bunch of jobs here in the United States of America just by that one simple change. Okay, more. He said, well, look, you're not going to get any special tax breaks. You're not going to get any grants or loans. We're going to take back any and all federal perks you might get. We're going to let – and then here's the most important one. You tax them to make it the equivalent or a little more expensive for them to outsource the job. So therefore, you have incentivized them to do what? Keep the jobs in the United States. So they'll tell you, hey, man, I'm outsourcing – let's just to make up numbers here. I'm outsourcing my car plant, my car factory, and I'm outsourcing it because I can pay 50% of what I pay now for the labor. Okay, so you say, if you outsource those jobs, we will tax you so that what you would pay those people is actually a little more expensive than what you would pay workers here in the U.S. That's it. Problem solved. Because then they go, oh, then why the fuck would I outsource if I'm actually going to net lose money and labor's going to cost more because I'm taxed to make up the difference? They go, oh, of course I'm going to keep the jobs here. Well, Bernie Sanders is saying, why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? And Donald Trump had, you know, alluded to this during the primary, which is why I was giving him credit during the primary when all the other idiot Republicans were trying to figure out the best ways to fuck over the middle class. Let's cut Social Security. Let's cut Medicare. Trump's like, how about we don't cut those, and oh yeah, I'm going to bring back tariffs and make sure that we keep jobs here in the U.S. Well, Bernie Sanders is like, oh great, so you're on board with all that? Let me do the Outsourcing Prevention Act, where I list all these policies that would be great for the middle class in America and would keep jobs here and would keep the economy thriving or make it better, and let's put it right on President Trump's desk. Okay, big guy, so you're for it? Okay, great, let's see. Actions speak louder than words, buddy. Why don't you go out and give a press conference? Why don't you go out and give one of your speeches? I know you love giving rallies, where you say, I support the Outsourcing Prevention Act, and Senator Bernie Sanders is 100% correct. I said I wanted to work with him. I said I wanted some of his supporters. Well, look, I'm coming through on the promises, the things I said. And Bernie keeps saying this. He keeps doing media rounds and saying it. All the promises he made to workers on the campaign trail, we're going to hold him accountable. So we're going to oppose him just viciously and fiercely and vehemently and fervently when he tries to come up with policies that are racist or sexist or xenophobic. If he tries to ban 1.6 billion Muslims from the country, we're not going to give a fucking inch. We're not going to give a centimeter. We'll not stop for a breather if we hear he's trying to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants. He wants to do nationwide stop and frisk. Nationwide stop and frisk, which has been proven to take away the rights of minorities, because well over 90% of the stops yield absolutely nothing, and you've just taken away their Fourth Amendment rights. So you want to do all that? We're not going to give a fucking inch. But if you want to do an infrastructure bill, you want to keep jobs here in the U.S. and fight TPP, you want to protect Social Security, you want to do those things? I'm going to work with you, and I'm going to hold your ass accountable. So here's a bill which outlines many of the things you said you were in favor of. Your move, big guy. Go ahead. Where's your speech? So we'll see what happens here, but this is a brilliant move from Bernie Sanders, because this is Bernie Sanders saying, I'm calling your bluff, bitch. Oh, really? You're in favor of all these things? I mean, some of these things were exactly what Trump said on the campaign trail, 35% tariff for certain goods. Bernie's like, okay, 35% tariff. Boom, let's do it. So you want to do – and by the way, Democrats, where are you? It's always Bernie Sanders doing all, like, the actual work. The other Democrats are, you know, out there. Harry Reid and fucking Joe Biden and Obama are sitting in a restaurant somewhere with their thumbs up each other's asses going, oh, yeah, the establishment Democrats are great. Shouldn't Hillary Clinton have won? And Bernie's out there like, oh, you morons, come on, let's get to work here. You know, infrastructure bill, block TPP, let's go. But that's the thing, a lot of the establishment Democrats don't agree with Bernie. They don't agree that we should keep manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. They're bought by corporations, just like most of the Republicans are. So in a weird way, we're sitting here rooting for Bernie Sanders, obviously, but for Trump to come through on what he said during the primary, which, by the way, I have no way of knowing if he actually meant it because he's Donald fucking Trump and he flip-flops on everything. So we'll see, man. But Bernie Sanders, yet again, a fantastic move here, holding Donald Trump accountable and simply proposing a good piece of legislation. I want to see all the fucking Democrats come out there and argue with Bernie Sanders and make the case, man, because these are things that would actually help the American people, and it's time to hold Trump accountable for some of the good things he said. Okay. Next. Squeeze in probably one more here before the final break. Business Insider has a terrifying report for us on the state of the economy. They explain Deutsche Bank's chief international economist. Hey, by the way, is it Deutsche or Deutsche? I've heard people say it both ways. Whatever. their chief international economist, Torsten Slok, I know I'm mispronouncing that, sent around a chart in a recent note to clients showing the share of U.S. household wealth by income level. Notably, listen to this fact. The top 1% of households now hold about the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. Let me repeat that because I know the first time I read it, it was literally unbelievable. The top 0.1% of households now hold about the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. So let's understand that. It's not the top 5% of households that have about the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. It's not top 5%, which, by the way, would still be fucking bonkers. It's not the top 1% of households that has the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. It's the top 0.1% of households that has the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. Hey, guys. Those people didn't just work harder than you. See, this is where I start to go fucking nuts and get angry at people if they try to bring up the meritocracy argument in the context of these facts. Because that's just bullshit. It's just not true that those 0.1% of people, they worked so much harder than everybody in the fucking country that they deserve to have the same amount as the bottom 90%, 0.1%, same amount as the bottom 90%. They didn't just work harder. That's not a system based on merit. That's not a fair competition. That's a game being grotesquely rigged. By the way, you want some more economic facts? These will blow your mind, because every time I fucking think of them, they blow my mind. 50% of Americans, 50%, half of Americans make $30,000 a year or less. What? 76% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Now let's broaden out. Let's not just talk about the United States of America. Let's talk about the world. The richest 62 people have more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion. Again, stop, think about that. Half the world, 62 people have more than half of the goddamn world. Okay, you cannot get to this point without corruption. You cannot get to this point without nepotism. You cannot get to this point without inherited wealth. Hey, by the way, this is why an estate tax is just the most obvious, reasonable tax ever. You tax dead people with estates. And by the way, their kids are still going to be massively, massively rich. But you just make it so that they're not rich enough to fucking totally buy a democracy and buy the goddamn world. Don't you want to prevent the Paris Hiltons from having enough money to literally corrupt a democracy, corrupt a country? I'm fine with her being passed down millions of dollars to be financially secure for her life. But it shouldn't be, oh, somebody dies and they were worth $3 billion, so the kid gets fucking $2 billion. That is insanity. So, look, man, this is all happening while, I mean, you guys, we don't even need to bring it up, but the amount of extreme poverty in the world is off the fucking charts. Again, when you narrow it down to just the United States, you're talking about 45,000 people that die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. 45,000 people. I mean, you have hundreds of thousands of homeless people. And again, let me repeat, 0.1%, the top 0.1% of households now hold about the same amount of wealth as the bottom 90%. Hey, guys, you know what follows after numbers like this? Gigantic economic crashes. So this isn't just a thing that's like, okay, no, we should do it because it's good for the middle class and it's good for the poor. We should fix that because it's good for the middle class and the poor. No, it's a thing because it's also good for the rich. Some of them might not get it, and they might be bullheaded in their approach in the opposite direction here. But when you have this extreme level of inequality, you know what the result is? The peasant class can no longer afford to buy the goods that are made by the so-called captains of industry. So the bubble bursts, and then you get fucking significantly poorer also. I mean, Great Depression. We had income inequality levels this high right before the crash in the Great Depression. And we're right back to that point. That is unsustainable. Do you understand that? Now, on the flip side, when you had a more equal distribution of wealth, and when I say equal, I don't mean like everybody has exactly the same. Of course not. There's still levels of income inequality. There's still rich people. There's still poor people, yada, yada. So, but when you had just a system that wasn't this grotesquely uneven and unequal, well, then you had the most stable economy the United States of America has ever seen. The golden age of economic expansion, they called it. That's when unions were strong, you know. So this is, that's when money didn't corrupt politics nearly as much as it does now. That really started happening the way it is right now in the late 70s. So, but this is what needs to be fixed. It has to be fixed. I mean, we need to set up a universal healthcare system. We need to set up a universal education system. We have a student loan debt crisis, which is going to fucking explode. We have a derivatives crisis, which is going to explode and crash the system, and a student loan debt crisis, and just a debt crisis. So all these things, I mean, the bubble can pop in so many ways. Even the subprime mortgage bubble can pop again because it was just reinflated. It wasn't like the fundamental underlying problems were fixed. We need to re-regulate Wall Street. We need to do universal health care. We need to do universal education. We need to have a living wage as a minimum wage. We need to increase unionization to make the middle class in the United States of America strong. Guys, none of these are radical proposals. In fact, if you disagree with them, it's radical. The system we have right now is as radical as it gets. When you have 0.1% of people with the same amount of wealth as 90% of the country. Oh, God damn it. Half the country, 50%, making $30,000 a year or less. It's going to crash. Iceberg dead ahead. You have to fix these underlying problems. You have to make the system better. Because if you don't, it is fundamentally unstable. And obviously, based on the numbers here, it's also just flat out immoral. Okay. Let me take a break. When we come back, I got to talk about foreign policy. Got a big story on that front. And we also have the worst anti-Trump argument you've ever heard in your life, and I'm not kidding about that. All right, so stay right there, guys. We'll talk about that and much more.
Cut the music up. Yeah.
By the way, I totally forgot that Lil Wayne had a song where he sings. Like, the whole thing was him singing. That was pretty funny. Good news, I am no longer sitting on the gigantic mountain of pillows. It's pretty awesome. It was bad. You guys saw, in the segment where I unveiled the new studio, you saw me try to, like, show you how I get on the mountain. I had to put my foot on the chair, press up, land on the pillows, and kind of like fall back. And there was one time where I ate it. I fell. It was during a break, too. So I'm getting up there, boom, get on it, and then I just slowly but surely fall over, and I got to press against the wall to stop from falling, face planting. But now no more. I actually got a chair that's the right height. Technically, it's a stool. Like, that's how tall this desk is, that I needed technically a stool. It's like an office stool, but it's built like a chair, like a regular office chair, but it's a stool technically. So I don't know, whatever. Anywho, talking too much about this. All right, let's continue here. I'm going to talk a little bit about some foreign policy stuff. The Daily Beast is reporting on a story here that pretty much nobody else is mentioning, and that's sad because it's really, really important, and it just gets no play. So it's titled, Elite U.S. Special Operators Build Center for Perpetual War on Terror. Well, that's nice. So, you know, we've already been involved in the War on Terror for over 15 years. Remember, 2001 was the launch of the Afghanistan War. 2003 was the Iraq War. And they're saying, at this point, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're just like, yeah, perpetual war. Hey, also, isn't it kind of strange? We have two official wars still going on, like declared and all that. There was the war in Iraq, which I guess briefly they would have argued, we stopped it for 13 seconds, then we went right back in. But there's that, and then there's the war in Afghanistan. Do you ever hear about that on the news? Like, I would like somebody, hey, Media Matters or anybody out there who looks into this stuff, go back through the archives for the past year, let's just say, and tell us the number of days that went by on the different news channels, whether it's MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, you name it. Tell us how many days went by without them even mentioning the fact that we're still in a fucking war. Wouldn't that be an interesting fact to have when you find out, like, okay, CNN went 78 days without mentioning the fact that the goddamn country is still at war. So it's just sad. But now they're like, oh, nobody's looking? Wonderful. Let's build a permanent base. So they explain here, preparing for a multi-generational international fight against terrorists, U.S. Special Operations Chiefs are launching a new counter-terrorist nerve center at an undisclosed location in the Middle East to fight the so-called Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, and any other terrorist actors. The Joint Special Operations Command, or JSOC as it's called, by the way, Jeremy Scahill has done some great work on them, the U.S. military's premier counter-terrorist strike force is expanding its existing targeting nerve center in the region to make space for more American terror-hunting personnel from three-letter agencies like the CIA, NSA, and FBI to foreign partners like Britain, France, Iraq, and Jordan. All right, let me pause here. So they're saying we're going to build a permanent base in the Middle East. By the way, totally not going to piss off more people and radicalize more people. You're good. Don't worry. And it's going to be, everybody's going to be there. It's going to be a fucking family reunion. Bring back the old club from when you used to, you know, openly topple third world governments and put in fascist dictators to do the bidding of our corporations. CIA, NSA, FBI, people from the UK, and the West. And we guys always go, oh, we're morally superior and we believe in human rights. Anyway, how many children did you drone bomb today at a wedding? Wonderful. Tremendous. So this is what they're doing. They're building a new nerve center. We got to fight terrorism, because, you know, the United States, we're like Superman. We're the world policemen. We're always there to help you, except when we do the opposite and we give fucking billions of dollars in weapons to Saudi Arabia, who arms Al-Qaeda and blows up women and children in Yemen, and when we arm Israel as they, to the tune of $38 billion as they continue to, you know, expand their settlements and do occupation and apartheid. But other than that, we believe in human rights, except for when we have Guantanamo Bay and we torture people and, you know, not so much. But other than that, other than the things that we do that violate human rights, we believe in human rights. So just so everybody knows, I'm not done yet. They continue here. The Obama administration is enshrining the strike force's role of gathering multiple points of view on who to kill and capture. How democratic in determining who to illegally kill, as it did in Iraq and Afghanistan, into a permanent information-sharing platform. Two U.S. officials tell the Daily Beast, speaking anonymously because they were not authorized to discuss the secret task force publicly, this has been going on, said a senior U.S. official briefed on the expanded mission. We're just putting it on steroids. That's nice. So there is no pretense anymore. Now we have seven interventions going on under a supposedly liberal Democratic president. In some places it's just drone bombs, in some places it's traditional airstrikes, in some places it's special operations boots on the ground, in some places it's an all-out war with an occupation. But there's seven different interventions going on. Now they're saying, yeah, look, the whole, even the idea that we would pretend to have an end goal. We're done with that. This is permanent. This is permanent. We're permanently fighting the enemy, the terrorists, and that's what's happening. Now, again, so even if you think they're honest in what they're trying to do, hey, they're just trying to fight terrorists, get over it, man. Okay, you do know that the evidence shows this has been counterproductive. So the goal that they say they're trying to reach, we just want to get rid of the terrorists, we just want to eliminate terrorists or limit the number of terrorists. Okay, well, even if you agree with that, well, it's been worse because there are more terrorists now than there were before we started the war on terror. So it's just been a failure. It's like the war on drugs. Hey, we're doing it because we want to eliminate drugs or get rid of drugs or stop drug use. Well, more people are doing drugs now. So you failed. You failed. But furthermore, again, it's not even about that. Because I just told you, we give Saudi Arabia billions of dollars in weapons. They funnel some of those weapons and that money to jihadist groups in Syria who are fighting Assad, to Al-Qaeda in Yemen, so they can have a militia on the ground fighting for the Sunnis to take the government back from the Shia Houthis. So we're aiding, which fucking General Petraeus said, let's arm Al-Qaeda to fight Assad and fight ISIS. So we are arming jihadists. Our allies are arming jihadists. We back civil rights violators all around the world. The guy in, I think it was Uzbekistan, just died, the dictator. He boiled people alive, and we gave fawning statements about him when he died. So we don't care about human rights. It's not about being the world police. It's not about being altruistic. That's a comical, comical lie. It's really about power. It's really about control. And it's really about natural resources. And it's really about the corporatocracy and our business interests. It's imperialism 101. This idea that, oh, the U.S. government is so... We're so much more... We care so deeply about other people. And trust me, we're totally not like every other fucking empire ever that really, at the end of the day, has selfish motivations. No, we are. You ain't special, bitch. Your shit stinks. So just like every other empire ever, where they, oh, we're the leadership role, and they all told themselves a pretty little lie. Every empire ever. Oh, no, we're doing it because we have the right value system, and we got implemented around the world. Duh. Oh, really? That's interesting, because that's what every other empire said, and every other empire ended up collapsed under the weight of their own hubris and arrogance and narcissism, because at the end of the day, it all became about us, about our own power, our own control. It ain't about human rights. It ain't about the people. It never was about that. Again, oh, no, Kyle, you don't get it. The United States is just trying to stop Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab from implementing Sharia. God damn it, you stupid liberal. Really, then why did we just let Brunei in the TPP when they implemented Sharia like 2 years ago? In 2014, Brunei implemented Sharia. They're an ally of ours. You know how we all, according to your logic, we got to invade, we got to topple the regime change, we got to do regime change. Terrorists implementing Sharia. Horrific, terrible, terrible. There wasn't a peep about that. Nobody spoke about that. Why? Because they're our ally. If you're our ally, you can do whatever you want. You want to implement Sharia, you want to take away human rights, you want to crack down on people, you want to treat women as second-class citizens, you want to behead people for taking drugs. We don't give a fuck. You're on our side. You're with our corporations. Do whatever you want. So it's got nothing to do with, oh, stop Sharia, stop the fucking human rights violators. Nothing to do with that. And now it never ends. And this is what your taxpayer dollars are going for. We got people in Flint, Michigan, who still don't have clean drinking water. Little kids don't have clean drinking water in the United States of America. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D. 45,000 people die in the U.S. every year because they don't have access to basic health insurance. Basic health care, I should say. Millions of people don't have health insurance. Even after Obamacare, which was a little step in the right direction. We got all these problems, man. Half of Americans, 50%, make $30,000 a year or less. You think maybe we could use some of these resources? Do you know how much money we spend on military bases all around the world? We have 800 bases all around the world. It costs us $100 billion a year to maintain those businesses. We're wasting money on that when we have hundreds of thousands of homeless people here in the U.S. We got to get better priorities. We wasted $7 trillion on the Iraq war. That's by 2053, when you add in the interest and you add in the cost for the veterans' health care. $7 trillion. You think maybe that money could have been used somewhere else? And by the way, they never ask that question for war. Hey, how can we afford this? They always ask that question for social safety net programs. We're going to feed our kids? How can we afford to feed the fucking kids? That costs too much. Endless war? Blank check. Our priorities are beyond fucked up. And what do we even achieve in Iraq? Nothing. We made it worse. I mean, Saddam Hussein was an authoritarian monster. Don't get me wrong. But that doesn't mean you topple him because he's a bad guy. There's a lot of bad guys around the world, a lot that we actively support. But he didn't attack us. We went in there, did an offensive war, toppled a government that didn't attack us, occupied the country, hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed, the region was broken, ISIS rose out of the ruins. And now we started the fire, and now to put it out, we're going in there and we're starting more fires. Genius, really genius. Okay. All right, what beat is that? Somebody tweeted at me. I was going to say it, but I'm not going to say it. You got to tweet it at me. If you tweet it at me, you get nothing. All right, Southern Poverty Law Center. Let's get to a clip here that I got for y'all. A representative from the Southern Poverty Law Center went on CNN to discuss Donald Trump, and he made a hilarious argument at the end here. This, I think, I'm going to file under the single worst anti-Trump argument ever made.
Yesterday, Donald Trump released his 100-day plan on YouTube, and he announced some very thorough, some very specific things that he was going to be doing by executive action. And he referenced a phrase in the midst of this speech. He said that he's going to drain the swamp. Drain the swamp was a meme, and a Twitter hashtag that grew, exploded really, after Donald Trump came forward with allegations that it was a rigged election. And it was spread specifically, among the people that were spreading the drain the swamp hashtag were avowed racists, white supremacists who exist on Twitter to harass and demean various ethnic groups. So we have a little bit of a two-sided message here. Yeah, he's saying stop it, but he's also giving a wink, wink, nod, nod to the very people he's asking to step away from their violence.
All right, Ryan Lenz, thanks so much. We should know, different phrases can mean different things to different people. I mean, there are plenty of people who are in favor of draining the swamp, not having lobbyists involved and taking some of the money and donations out of politics that I'm sure have no notion at all
that
is in any way connected or supported by groups like this. But I do appreciate the point there. Ryan Lenz, thanks so much.
Even the goddamn CNN host. CNN hosts are paid to not rock the boat, to be milquetoast, say nothing, don't care about substance type characters, to do the he said, she said, false neutrality, false equivalence all day long. That's what these guys are paid for. Even he was like, come on, son, really, that's your argument? There's like a lot of like white supremacists online who say, maybe we should like drain the swamp. So since some white supremacists happen to be randomly anti-corruption, I think I'm going to be pro-corruption, and if you're against corruption, you're racist. This is the kind of thinking that will lose the Democrats the White House and taking back the Senate and taking back the House, not only for 2020, but 2024, 2028, and the list goes on and on. Okay, no, that you are a stupid person if you make an argument like that. I need you to get that. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You're a moron. You're an idiot if that was even mildly convincing to you in any way. The meaning of drain the swamp is drain the swamp. Get rid of the lobbyists. They explain what it fucking means. Take their fucking word for it. If you're going to take their word for it when they say ban 1.6 billion Muslims, and you should, well, also take their word for it when they say drain the swamp, get rid of the lobbyists. Now, look, whether or not he actually does that is a different question, and so far the evidence is that he's not going to do that. But that's my point. Instead of making a substantive criticism of Donald Trump and say, hey, man, you said drain the swamp, but you're not draining the swamp. Instead of doing that, he's going out there saying drain the swamp is racist. So, by logical extension, getting the lobbyists out of the system in Washington, getting the money out of the system, is racist. You know, the Democrats are better people who aren't racist, and many of the establishment Democrats are for corruption, so therefore I'm for corruption too, because there are some racist people are against corruption. Why the fucking gross, disgusting, sloppy, generalized black and white thinking? It's like if there's any white supremacist or jihadist or anything like that on the planet, anybody like that, who, for example, likes Sicilian pizza. Well, if you like Sicilian pizza, you're a fucking Nazi. You're a white supremacist. You're a jihadist. I mean, there's a double-sided message. There's a double-sided message. Okay, so you like Sicilian, but at the same time, the fucking jihadist likes Sicilian. A white supremacist likes Sicilian. God, you're fucking racist. You're so racist. That's how these people are thinking now. That's how they're thinking. That is how they're fucking thinking. You could find jihadists who believe in universal health care for inside their grotesque system where they behead people and they treat women as second-class citizens and they have sex slaves and blah, 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 blah. That doesn't mean universal health care is wrong. That doesn't mean that. And the fact that I need to explain this elementary logic, oh, I hate it. I hate it so much because this guy thinks he's a good person. This guy's patting himself on the back. Yep, I showed him. Draining the swamp is totally racist, bro. I showed him. I want to drain the swamp of this guy's head. Okay. All right, next. Let's talk a little bit about a pastor here. We have a pastor here from Mississippi. His name is John Kilpatrick, and he's going to do some speaking in tongues for us. I love this.
I've got a question for you. If somebody has problems with demon possession, where are they going to get help? At CNN? Where are they going to get help? In the mental institution? It ought to be in the house of God. It ought to be in the house of God. If somebody's got demons, if somebody's bound by demons, they don't need the men in the white coats. They don't necessarily need medication. They need somebody with authority and power and anointing that says, be gone in the name of Jesus and be set free. I've seen it. I know what I'm talking about. Oh, come on, give God praise. The politically correct mindset would say, I'm a crazy man. The politically correct mindset would say, don't listen to him. He's a nut. He's an Elmer Gantry type person. Don't listen to him. I'm telling you, you can think whatever you want to think about me, but if you ever hear me preach, I'm going to preach to you the Word of God. About it, but I am going to say, I'm coming against the spirit of captivity in America. We've had an election now. Things are going to open up. God's Spirit's going to begin to move again. In America, I believe that with all my heart. Somebody give God praise. Oh, come on, praise him. My God, feel that. Sit down, keep standing. I feel God here. Come on. Hey! Woo! Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Woo! Mighty God! Revival! I said revival! Revival! Come to America! Woo! Woo! God sweep over Meridian, Mississippi with a Man.
What the fuck did we just watch? I'm beginning to think that fundamentalist religious people feel something the equivalent of doing cocaine or maybe crystal meth at the same time as they're doing mushrooms or LSD or something like that. It's like you took both those drugs. You took some massive upper, like cocaine or crystal meth, and you also took a hallucinogenic substance, a psychedelic substance, like maybe LSD or maybe mushrooms, and they're reacting in real time. Because that's what that is. If I had to imagine somebody who's fucking high as balls on coke and also at the same time hallucinating a little bit, that would be like that guy. That's pretty much what it is. Because I'm sure you caught it there, but the times of Shabba Labba Dabba Brumbo Shankum Flanging Kumba Lamban Simba Duka Wana Wana. He's speaking in tongues. That's what that is. Speaking in tongues is some bullshit that fundamentalist religious people do where they feel like they're connecting to God. It's the power of God is coming through my body. Yeah, no, it's not. You're just a weird person. And I love at the beginning, like it gets, perpetually more and more incoherent as time goes by. But he started with, where are you going to go when you got demon possession? What, you going to go to CNN? As if anybody ever, like, offered that as an option. Like, oh, are you suffering from what you think is demon possession? Give Wolf Blitzer a call. Wolf Blitzer, he's great with demon possession. He'll tell you, he'll give you the home remedy. You take a little bit of salt. Maybe mix it with some honey and some olive oil, do a few teaspoons of that, boom, demon possession, over. What are you saying? And also, just rewind, demon possession, really? You're a grown-ass man, you're going to talk about demons? That's what you're going to talk about? Fucking demons. And he goes, if you feel like you got demon possession, what are you going to get help with the mental institution? Yes? That's the exact right answer. I feel like I'm possessed by a demon. Well, then maybe you're having a paranoid schizophrenic episode, something. There's something going on there, man. You need help. Go to a mental institution. And then he says at one point, quote, they don't need medication. Counterpoint, they do. And then he says, the politically correct mindset would say I'm a crazy man. They'd say I'm nuts. It's not the politically correct mindset that would say that. It's the correct mindset that would say that. You're fucking in tongues. And what is the revival thing? I don't know what that is. Where did I find this clip? It was either Raw Story or Right Wing Watch, but I think the headline, they said something about, he goes on to say some shit about Hillary Clinton. I don't even hear the shit about Hillary Clinton. He said some Jezebel, but revival, America's election. I don't even hear him say Hillary Clinton's name. But that's my point. What does revival mean? Does revival mean that Trump won, so it's a revival for America, but I'm pretty certain if Trump watched you do this, even he would say, what the fuck's going on here? people are weird, man. People are weird. This scares me. Because you look at this and you go, well, none of those people are going to be very helpful with solving the big problems facing the world. You want to go to this guy and have a conversation about climate change? That's what you're going to do? Hey, man, look, sea level rise. You know, the coral reefs are fucking bleaching. We got all these issues that we got to talk about. We got increased famine and drought and natural disasters. It's going to cost trillions of dollars to, keep up with all the losses from. We got to switch to renewable technology. We got to do it right now. We got to do green technology. Let me tell you more about the demons, and don't go to CNN. Jake Tapper ain't going to help you. You got to, with the demons, you got to cast the demons out by speaking in the shabba blah 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 blah. Fucking speaking in tongues, because I'm a weirdo. I'm losing hope, guys. I'm losing hope. It's so sad to watch stuff like that. Okay. All right, let's do one more here. Maybe two, but I'm leaning towards one. And we'll call it a day. A little day skis for you. Televangelist Jim Baker spoke about the election results and what God told him afterwards.
The red is the votes for Trump.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The red is the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
The grand old party.
There they are. Mm-hmm. Now, that's where it is right now. They're still counting ballots.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any difference.
Right.
Hillary's resigned. It's in the bank. You know,
right.
It's done. You know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you live in the blue, put it back on the screen. If you live in the blue, any
yeah.
spot that's blue,
right?
I would say, oh God,
oh God,
help me,
help California and Arizona.
Oh God,
oh my God,
forgive me.
Oh, forgive us, Lord.
Because those are the ones who came against the will of God in this election.
Now you've got to understand,
and I just want to tell you, God has spoken to me. I've seen under the ground in Florida, in California,
in
L.A.,
mm-hmm.
and God spoke to me that in Los Angeles alone, there's going to be such an earthquake come
yes.
that literally the big buildings will be laying on their sides. All of L.A. is going to collapse, downtown L.A.
It's not that there's going to be an earthquake in California because Donald Trump won and God is mad at California for voting for Hillary Clinton. There's going to be an earthquake in California because there's a giant fucking fault line that's locked and loaded, and it's been like that for years. By the way, I like how we just casually scared the fuck out of everybody in California. But no, I'm serious. There is going to be a big earthquake there. I've read articles about it constantly. They say, look, man, a big one's coming. It's overdue. So I'm just keeping it real with you guys. You know, I'm not saying it's going to be like the movie San Andreas with fucking The Rock, but it'll be bad. So there's your forewarning. But I love how this guy, he's like, let me link this to God. Really? That's what God is going to punish people for fucking voting for Hillary Clinton? By the way, what a loving God. That's the thing he'll say in the next sentence. God is loving and merciful. Except if you vote for Hillary Clinton, in which case he'll destroy everything you have with an earthquake. So it's not really a loving God now, is it? They don't care about the contradictions in their theory. They don't care about reason or logic. And, I mean, seriously, you would want to worship a God who would do that? Would you guys want to worship a God who, even if you're on that panel and you're one of these fucking fundamentalist kooks, that's the kind of God you want? A God who would murder people who disagree politically? I mean, that means God is like fucking Hitler or Stalin. It's unbelievable. And the idea that anybody out there, is there anybody convinced by this? Please tell me no, there's nobody convinced by this. Because how can one bring themselves to believe that Donald Trump is God's choice? I mean, look at the guy. Look at the guy. God wanted somebody with six business bankruptcies, as he pretended to be great with business. God wanted a guy who was caught on tape saying, I grabbed them by their pussy, I don't even wait. God wanted a guy who said, let's take out their families, talking about civilians in the Middle East, family members of terrorists, not just the terrorists themselves. God wanted a guy who doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down. Torture. We got to torture. We got to torture. Whose wages would Jesus lower? Because that's another thing Trump said during one of the debates in the primary season. Wages are too high. We got to lower wages. Believe me. Tremendous. And man, if you close your eyes and you listen, Trump sounds just like Jesus. Doesn't matter, man. This is authoritarianism. They just worship at the altar of power. They genuflect at the altar of power and their overlords. And they've decided the Republican Party is the party I'm in, so okay, who's my daddy in this party? And the way they'd rank it is, you know, I listen to that, I listen to my leader, and I listen to God. And they never, if you are waiting for them to be principled, you're going to be waiting a long time. Could you imagine if it was Obama who said, I grabbed them by their pussy, I don't even wait? Would fucking televangelist Jim Baker be out there like, I got nothing bad to say about that. I got nothing bad to say about him. No, he's all family values. If Michelle Obama fucking took naked pictures half her goddamn life, would these guys say, what do you mean? There's no problem here. I don't know what you guys are talking about. No, they would fucking, they would be livid. They wouldn't be able to see straight. They'd be so angry. But when Trump does it, oh, family values, schmamly flowies. We don't give a fuck about any of that. That was all, those are the things we use to attack our political opponents with. So if our political opponent happens to be gay or had an affair or did this or did that, well, we'll go after them ruthlessly. But if you're on our team and you do it, not only are we okay with it, we think fucking God chose you, and we think that your political opponents will be killed by our loving God and should be killed. By the way, does it sound like when that earthquake hits, does it sound like Jim Baker will do the Christian thing and go and help people out of the rubble? No, no, they voted for Hillary Clinton, so I'm just warning you. You made God mad by, you know, voting against Mr. Grabbing by their pussy, so there's going to be punishment, damn it. And I also love how America-centric these morons are. Like, what has God, why doesn't he, you know, pick who he wants and, like, not have an election? Like, God could just appear in the sky, with the fucking halo and everything. It's like, well, look, I have to tell you, it's time to change the system, and we are putting this Jesus-like character into power. He's a Jewish socialist who at one time was a carpenter in his life, but his name is Jesus Bernie Sanders Christ. Okay, I went too far there, but it is true. Bernie Sanders was a carpenter. Bernie Sanders is Jewish. Bernie Sanders is self-describes as a socialist, democratic socialist. So I wonder which candidate is most like Jesus. But did this guy say anything about that? No. And why is it just America? Why not in fucking, I don't know, Trinidad and Tobago? Why isn't God, like, caring about that election? Like, I'm really into that election. I got to pick the leader for that country, let me tell you. Greenland. There's some serious shit going on in Greenland. There's some serious shit going on in Kazakhstan. I'm all over it. No, God, in these guys' minds, God's like, I don't even know what those places are. America. It's all about America. And obviously he'll kill the people who disagree with who he wanted. Why make them in the first place if, as God allegedly did, if you're going to kill them? I got to make them because they're great. I had a change of heart. God had a change of heart? It's so ungodly. Anyway, I'm getting off in the weeds here, but it's just sad. This televangelist is an utter jackass, and he still has a show. So there's that. All right, guys. I love you, baby. I'm out of time, and I will see all of you tomorrow. Mwah. Peace.